We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Blue Wire.
NBA Most Valuable Player, Giannis Antetokounmpo.
Giannis trailing the lob. Giannis Antetokounmpo.
1 second.
Hey there, welcome to the Eurostep Podcast Network NBA Finals Game 4 post-game pod. I am Ty Windisch of the Eurostep. I am joined by the Shook Rohan Kadi of the Eurostep and by Adam McGee of the Win in 6 podcast. The Bucks won an FU game. We'll see if this ends up being an explicit tag podcast, but really not the most fun game, to say the least, for most of it. A completely awful call goes against the Bucks, and the first thing I thought of was Game 7 against the Brooklyn Nets, where it seemed like such a slog, and there's no way they're going to win, and they got fired up. They had calls go against them, and you know what? They won the game. They did it again, 109-103. The series is tied up. We barely got here, but we got here. Fellas, how's it going?
So, chest pains.
Yeah. The Bucks account tweeted after the win, "How we feeling, Bucks fans?" with a picture of Drew Holiday. Not great. Honestly, like, I should be
being I feel right tremendous.
Now. Oh, I feel great. I feel great, and also I might die like live on the pod. I'm not joking about chest pains.
Like, I'm dying. Like, I don't, you guys can probably hear this in my voice.
Oh yeah, you sound
everyone
sound
can hear deceased. It.
I thought I was going to be the one who sounds bad. This is my flu game.
I've been frozen in stress for the last hour and a half. I'm not moving for the next foreseeable future. Like, I to respond to your tweet, Bucks, I don't know if I feel that good.
I think you'll feel good tomorrow is my take.
You know what? A win is a win is a win at this stage in the game. Like, I am a process over results person. The Bucks are going to need to work on the process for the rest of this series. They certainly can play better.
Just win. Ty, this is the team that just wins
too.
Now.
They really are.
They just really need two. I don't care how they come. This was the ugliest game ever. I'd, you know, maybe just be ahead and manage to hold the lead rather than doing the whole come from behind in like the last 3 minutes thing. That might make it a little bit easier for all of us, but the games can be this ugly. They need two wins to be NBA champions. Just win. I do not care about process anymore. I do not care about how ugly anything is. My process at this point is borderline like, give Chris or Giannis the ball and don't let anyone else touch it except maybe if Brooks Pat. In the paint or Pat's in the corner, you know, otherwise.
It has to be a momentum shot for Pat, though. If it's any other shot, he's not hitting the broadside of a barn. He won't hit anything. He'll just airball the shot.
47% tonight.
If it's a big shot, you know it's going in. Somehow we're here. Somehow we've got, I don't know why we're talking about Pat up top, and I'm going to start talking about Pat.
We're just talking. We're talking about everything.
So this guy has been maligned by Bucks Twitter for being just the guy. Why is Pat Connaughton taking these big shots late in games? to give the ball to Pat Connaughton, and you know he'll hit a big shot. Like, what's happened here? How have we reached this point? I don't know, but we're here. And it doesn't make any sense whatsoever. My guy goes out there, airballs, goes up, throws up another brick. Then all of a sudden, he's making big plays in crunch time after absolutely throwing away any chance at basketball IQ in any sort of sane manner. And yet, here he is. He's making big plays. And I don't understand any of it.
Rohan, Pat is Giannis's workout buddy. They share a mentality. The Bucks need to put out part two of that video where Giannis going, I've been to the lowest of the lows. I airballed two straight free throws in OKC. Let's hear from Pat next time. They told me to go play for the Orioles when I signed my extension for less than $5 million a year. I don't know what else. They call me a slumlord. Everything else from Pat. Listen, he went through Wing
University.
Do you
think he knows that? I don't know if he knows that.
I mean, if he listens to the pod, he does now.
But he definitely doesn't.
I don't like your negativity on who does and doesn't listen to the pod.
Most players and coaches, I guess, he do not. They're kind of busy. Right? I don't think Pat's gone back to the locker room. He's like, I need to get home. New Eurostep Podcast Network episode is going to be dropping soon. And I need to hear Ty Windisch call me a slumlord. I don't think that's...
I didn't say it. I said people have said it. It's different.
Oh, okay.
It's right. Much different.
Jordan Windisch over here.
Allegedly.
I think Rohan was being harsh on Pat's game. He had a couple of bad misses. The problems with Pat's game were actually the classic Pat problems tonight, which was the fouls and the biting on every pump fake and just, you know, stay down. Then there was also that kind of fumbled pass inside where he would have been better just going up trying to finish himself. But I think Ayton got in his head. But, like, he made the shots. And even when he didn't, there was the one to tie the game that there ended up being a foul on Crowder. Although maybe that was the real foul, the one where Giannis got him on the face. He had a go-ahead three that kind of rimmed in and out before that. It's amazing. But yeah, you brought us down this road, Rohan, where we started the podcast talking about Pat. But he's just a great example, really. The way Bucks fans have had to go along with the journey of Pat, I feel like is where a wider NBA audience are having to go along with the Bucks of just being like, you know, this team can't get it done. This team, they'll never get over the line. They're not good enough. They don't have what it takes in the playoffs. They don't have what it takes in the finals. And here they are. They're just finding a way to do it.
We've gotten two Mike Breen bang calls on Pat Connaughton threes in the NBA finals. And I don't know what to do.
The video they play with those calls when they're hanging that jersey is going to be...
Ty,
fourth most minutes
in
this game.
Can we let this go for one episode?
I don't know if this is the episode to let it go, though. I don't want to add fuel to this fire because I know we could all get, like, engulfed by the flames, you know? Ty is not worried about where anyone else is. If we're in close proximity to fire, this thing is just going up.
I found out people are pissed about this take, which I think is the funniest thing on earth.
You found out?
Why would anyone be mad about a silly take where the preface is, if the Bucks win the championship, you're going to get pissed off about what numbers they do and don't retire? It's a championship. Retire Teague. I don't care. Anyway, enough Pat. Enough Pat talk. He was fine. He was pretty good.
He was good. He was very good. He was important. He was also a plus 21. And yeah. Only 4 Bucks in the end managed to get to positive plus minus. But yeah, things worked with Pat there in spite of the fact the Suns picked on him every single time.
Yeah, they did. Yeah. Let's talk about Giannis, who had a career-defining play in this game. I think Chris, certainly the best Buck, and we're going to talk about Chris as well with his, I think, 10 straight points at one point to close out a finals game. But Giannis started slow, did his typical come out at 2 minutes thing, just didn't look himself for most of the game. And then with the Bucks up 2, an alley-oop is completed to DeAndre Ayton. Well, the ball's in Ayton's hands. I have no idea how he did it, but Giannis rises up, destroys the freaking layup. The fast break goes the other way. Bucks extend the lead and never look back. And you could see him after the play on the other end had finished, just like he gave it everything. That was it. That was the last bit in the tank. For whatever reason, didn't have it tonight. The Suns switched up their coverages, everything else. Still, he didn't have it tonight, did not look his usual self. I loved that he was able to dip deep, deep within and pull that play out. I mean, that's a season-saving play, one of the greatest finals highlights of our lifetime. Just credit to Giannis for embodying the Bucks. Like, it's not pretty, but he found a way to get it done.
That play is impossible for any other player if it's not Giannis. This guy was in a deep drop, managed to turn around exponentially quicker than any other player could possibly do on that play, go up and meet DeAndre Ayton at the rim on a lob and just block it. That doesn't happen. These aren't things that people do. This is the, like, this is the NBA Finals, and we're still seeing Giannis rise above the rest of every other caliber of player. We've seen that throughout the years in terms of, you know, any, like, a random play against the Timberwolves on, like, a Wednesday in March. You know, like, you have these type of plays. No, this is the NBA Finals. This is the best of the best going at it. And he's separating himself on the biggest stage. That's different than doing it in, like, the regular season. It's different than doing it in earlier rounds of the postseason. Doing it on this stage makes you an all-time great. That is one of the greatest plays in the history of the NBA Finals. It's so good that for the first time ever, we have actual players, like, tweeting about the Bucks. Not CJ McCollum. Not CJ McCollum. We've got Damian Lillard chiming in. That block like by Giannis might have won them the game. Spencer Dinwiddie quote tweets that, changes it, and says might have won them the championship.
Let's go. Spencer Dinwiddie, taxpayer MLE. What a do, baby.
Man, this guy wants $300 million. He is not getting the taxpayer MLE.
Just under the table, Bitcoin. You never know. Galaxy.
We'll pay him in Eurocoin.
Yeah, there we go.
There we go. you can
not to be mistaken with actual euros. Just
no, no, clear. No. Just, yeah,
GYR. You can have the Bucks stock market all to yourself. But that's the type of play. No player has ever wanted to tweet anything good about Giannis ever. We've talked about this, Adam. You've brought this up a bunch. It's undeniable at this point. It's forcing these players to be like, oh my god, I have to say something about this. That's how good it is. That's how you know that Giannis did something that was incredible, because you forced the normal NBA, the other NBA players to be like, ah, oh, I have to recognize this. This was so good that I have to say something.
This reminds me of, and we're seeing quite a lot of it at the moment, where PJ Tucker, you keep seeing these clips where he's like, yeah, you know, people don't know what Giannis is really like, which you'd have to read between the lines to actually figure out what everyone thinks Giannis is like or how everyone feels about Giannis outside of Milwaukee. And there's a lot of stuff in that. I think part of it is just, you know, pretty irritating to play against. The guy who can do that to you has got to be annoying, got to be really, really annoying. He just had the greatest play in Bucks history. There's not really any competition. If anyone wants to throw one out, I have one shot that I think probably was the greatest play in Bucks history.
Kareem Skyhook in the finals.
Game 6 in 74. Yeah, that was the greatest highlight in Bucks history. To me, it is now being usurped. It's Giannis's block.
Yeah, like, it's hard to argue.
I there's nothing else. That's incredible. And he didn't have it tonight. Concerningly so, where, you know, with a few minutes to go, when all of us watching this, everyone listening was undoubtedly like ultra deflated. That thing that we talked about before, Ty, where if this team goes down 3-1, you know, they come back. I was ready to bail on that.
I was off ship after this game.
Because Giannis did not look like he looked the two previous games. I was starting to question, okay, is he really feeling his knee again? He may well have been, but on that play, he got up there, he made the block, he did exactly what the Bucks needed him to do. And just what a moment. What a moment. What a player.
We also have Andre Iguodala checking in here.
I was worried it was Andre Drummond trying to sell merch or something. God.
He said, that Giannis block was crazy, ellipses. King James-esque. Tagged him. He would know. Yeah.
Do we think LeBron's going to get back to that one?
LeBron is busy ghostwriting positive Space Jam reviews.
I was just going to say.
All the others.
LeBron's in crisis mode reading Space Jam reviews.
It's okay. CP3 didn't have a good game, so he can't tweet anything. That's the rule. True. Yeah.
Banana boat, umbrace.
You think he's going to tweet 2 to go for Giannis?
No. No, I don't think so, actually. You hope Giannis is better all around next game, but I think it is encouraging to see. What?
That's an insane sentence.
No, it's not, though. He was not good.
No, that's the point, because it's true.
Oh, yeah.
You're completely right.
It's more important that he delivers, though, which is the point. He can't have delivered in a bigger way than he ultimately did, but he was not good for most of this game.
Rohan has a good point. Giannis is not good. 26-14 with 5 offensive boards, 8 assists, 3 steals, 2 blocks.
And the greatest play in Bucks history.
Yeah. For sure. It ended up good, but it wasn't good.
Yeah.
And honestly, more than the numbers, it's like how he played, his whole vibe, couple of plays where they break down and, you know, he's the guy who could at least attempt to close out.
The first Jay Crowder three looked
pissed and he's like, no, I'm going to stand here. Yeah. I'm just going to stand here. I'm not going to close out. We're in the finals. At that point, you're like, something is up. Like, this isn't right. But the guy just – that play is pure determination. It's obviously all of his athletic gifts. It's his incredible timing. It's his awareness of where everyone is in the court, what's happening in the game at that moment. But to actually get there and pull it off, so much of that is just sheer determination as well. And does anyone want a championship more than Giannis? Has anyone been working every day for this moment? Maybe Pat, I don't know.
Thanasis.
It might be Pat. I was reading an article earlier and Giannis is like, yeah, Pat's the only guy who works harder than me. So maybe we've got to give Pat his credit there. But that's just kind of everything that for years and years, you know, you talk about, oh, Giannis's work ethic and he's going to improve on this and he's going to work on that. This was a moment where it wasn't about that. It's just like, split second, what have you got? What can you make happen here? And he made something happen that no other player in the league can make happen.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Philip has just lost the respect of the youth league football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Should we talk about Chris?
We should, because, I mean, we've had multiple great Chris games in this playoff run, and we had a game that we called the Brook Lopez legacy game. This is the Chris Middleton legacy game. It doesn't mean that there won't be more to come, and that the Bucks may well need him to have more.
They do.
But he was just like, grown man performance from Chris, just doing everything the Bucks needed, keeping the scoreboard ticking over. No one else was coming close to doing that. Like, this is going to be the game that I even think, beyond the block, it's going to be the Devin Booker game, because people are going to talk about everything Devin Booker did offensively, his incredible shot making, which, let's first of all, tip the hat to that. He was incredible. And then the other side of the Devin Booker conversation is going to be the 9 fouls he had.
Yep.
And he ultimately had to take himself out of the game because the refs just weren't going to do it at all.
His 38 points of regular of real points.
But not to get sidetracked onto Devin Booker right now, Chris Middleton had just 2 points less.
Yeah.
Just 2 points less. He was just as good. He was making the same kind of shots. The Bucks were doing a better job of actually freeing him up for open shots. But he was having to make tough, tough shots down the stretch, and he was stepping up to the mark time and time again and doing it. And he had a couple of rough spells in the game. I think it was early second quarter. He went pretty cold, but he kept shooting. Look at that. The best part of it all, 33 field goal attempts for Chris Middleton in a must-win game, the biggest game of his career. It's the thing that we've been on him about already in this series. It's the thing that you're always worried about is it's not the game where he doesn't make shots. It's the game where he doesn't take shots. This occasion, he took the shots and he made more than his fair share. He made exactly as many as the Bucks needed him to. And his playmaking, even from early in the game, he just had a feel for this game tonight that other players didn't. When Giannis didn't have it, when Drew was all over the place, Chris was the guy who could step up with control, and he could pick out a teammate or he could make a shot.
It was surgical down the stretch. They were just spamming Giannis-Chris actions because they knew that they were going to get a good look every time. Ty, this is, if there's one victory lap you should take, it's this one. In that you've been championing throughout the years. Wow, this is a struggle. just spam Giannis Chris actions down the stretch. And I have to agree with you, that's the way to go. And they realized, oh, we have to do this because nothing else is working. They,
nobody else is working is really the issue.
And this is the one action that they can get where you don't have to rely on a three-point shooter in order to create a good look. In that, in other actions that the Bucks run, a lot of their spacing is predicated on open three-point shooters. The Giannis Chris two-man action does not rely on that. And it doesn't help when, the team is once again shooting 7 for 29 from three. I was looking up oh man, how bad was that compared to this postseason? They've done worse than that 5 times in this postseason run. 5.
And yet.
5. This
and
is.
Yet.
Yeah. And yet they're tied in the NBA Finals. That stat just absolutely blew my mind. Oh my goodness. 24.1% from three. That's got to be the worst. Nope. It's the 6th worst this postseason. I hate this team.
Nothing goes their way. That's the story of this team. Nothing goes their way, and it doesn't matter, and they find a way to win anyway. That was Chris's game. Chris finally gets to the free throw line. 8 attempts in this game. That's huge. That's something that needs to continue.
And he should have had more. He should have had more.
He absolutely should have. But it
take
was just
the
nice.
One where he scored, but Mikal Bridges hit him on the head. It's how does that not get called, along with the other 30
I will say
about this game?
I thought it was an overall just terribly officiated game. I
think one of the worst I've ever seen.
Went worse against the Bucks, but it wasn't a rig job for either team. They were just terrible officials, I thought.
I do think the timing of it, the Bucks got the brunt of it late.
Yeah, the Suns.
And obviously
were
in the most notable ways. Yeah. But the Suns had their own spells where
earlier
sure,
in the fourth,
you could
it was
you
tough.
Could feel bad about it.
Yeah,
but it turned so hard on the Bucks down the stretch.
Yeah.
When you were doing your intro earlier and you were you saw some of the calls were going and you went back to, I just thought you were going to say 2001. I just thought you were going to, because I've become the person that I always swore I would not become, because when Booker fouled out for the first time without being called, I was just like, I'm sorry, Ty, this is an explicit pod now, but that's funny. Holy shit. Yeah. This is actually, these people have been right all along. It's all rigged. Well, I've wasted all these years. It's rigged. It's rigged against this team, because how is that? I've never seen. It might be the worst call I'd ever seen until they did it again twice more, where you're like, okay, this is now seriously weird. Because even when that happened, my instinct was, okay, he's gonna get called for something really soft. The makeup call has got to come, because they're gonna huddle. They're gonna be shouted at by Bud, by players. PJ Tucker was on the bench, I think, at the time, but you could see him really fired up. And the other thing too, and I was like, okay, everyone just keep their calm. The Bucks could not have afforded to get called for a tech. No. And the officiating was that bad that I would not have been stunned if they're like, you know what, we're going to call a tech on someone in the finals at this point. But they didn't. But in that moment, and really with the way it was officiated down the stretch, it was all set up for, you know, just more pain. More pain, endless pain, the kind of pain the Bucks fans will pass down from generation to generation to generation, so everyone could be miserable forever.
If we make it that far.
And then the Bucks just went and won anyway. So we could all forget about it.
They got in the bonus. The Suns were in the bonus at around like around the 7.5-8 minute mark. And that's the stretch you guys were referring to earlier, where it just, the Bucks got the brunt of it late, because there was just a stretch, like a 2 to 3 minute stretch, where they got 3 of their 14 fouls in there. And I was just like, are you serious? Like, again, this was a terrible game for both teams. I will say that. It's just, I'm actually glad they didn't call any text. It's almost like self-realization, like, yeah, we really fucked this up. Like, I guess we can accept if you're gonna get mad at us, because we deserve it. Like, hey, shout out to the officials for realizing that they were bad.
How about the clear path foul that wasn't? How was that not?
That's not a clear path foul.
How?
Because Booker had fouled Middleton
before the ball was out of Chris's hands. Yeah. So it's just a foul on Chris. The pass isn't off, so you're just fouling Chris.
I thought it was on the jersey pull. I didn't have volume.
No, the jersey pull was before the pass as well.
So there's no foul before the ball is out of his hands. So the foul is basically stopping the play from the point where Chris had the ball. It is stupid, because it is a clear path.
After the Atlanta series, the only team to get a clear path foul against them was the Bucks.
I mean, Atlanta never did clear path fouls. They're actually smart about the take fouls.
They're really good at take fouls.
Yeah, sorry to be like a bummer right now, but they never actually committed any clear path
fouls. It was terrible to watch, and it should be outlawed. But they're really good at it. They've got a lot of practice.
They can work on it in Cancun.
The Suns have got plenty of practice of fouling, too. I mean, just generally, I did tweet this. If the Suns are going to be so upset about the free throws, maybe they should just stop fouling. Stop fouling everyone. Like, it's just relentless fouling. Like, I really, all the time when Devin Booker was in foul trouble too, I just kept being like, there's no way he's even going to come close to fouling out. It's Devin Booker. Like, he's not going to find himself in the kind of spots where he's going to have to foul over and over again. And he could have fouled out 4 times. He ultimately did. Like,
no, he
didn't. Incredible. No, he did. He called it like himself, and he took himself out of the game. This is what happened.
But he didn't foul out.
He didn't foul out.
He ended up 5.
Yeah.
Oh, well, I don't know. I do not know what's happening. I thought he'd actually fouled out in like
the final. Shout out to
they never gave him a 6th foul.
Nope,
never. Nick Wright said he's the first player in the NBA Finals to score 40 and have 7 fouls. At MKE Roberts said fun stat for the pod.
He had at least 9 fouls. I can't believe that. I'm angry about it now. The Bucks won. They're about to win a championship, but I'm angry. I thought he actually did foul out eventually, but no. Truly incredible. The Bucks were at home. The Bucks are at home, and they couldn't get like any of the obvious Booker fouls to be called. Amazing.
they're going to need two more Chris games like this, because I don't think they're going to get much gift wrap to them going forward. Not with two of the games in Phoenix, at least. Although Chris Paul did kind of gift wrap a bit to the Bucks tonight.
Yeah, let's talk about that.
Let's talk about Chris and Drew, honestly. Chris Paul and Drew. Mm-hmm. They kind of go together.
So you can say that Chris Paul did not have his best game tonight. And this has just been sort of a downward spiral for Chris Paul after his magnificent Game 1 performance, where he had, I believe, 30 or an obscene amount of points on like 12 of 19 shooting. And it's slowly and slowly gone downhill. A lot of that has been attributed to Drew Holiday being more aggressive on him. But also, Chris Paul is being not Chris Paul-like. And it's very strange to see, especially in this game. We saw a lot of carelessness with the ball. Like, he was doing between-the-leg crossovers on the baseline and throwing passes away from his center. It was strange to see.
He had a truthful jump shot come up short.
Yeah, it was perfectly positioned. It was like a little push shot after he got to, I believe it was a PJ to bite. Mm-hmm. And he came up short on it. I guess that's Chris Paul, but it's get it short.
We got it.
I mean, listen, when you're 6 feet tall and 35 years old in the NBA, it gets really hard. It gets really hard. And I just think, like,
physicality wearing on him in this series?
Absolutely. And I just think
it's just careless turnovers.
But that's got to be fatigue. Like, that
I think
does.
He's getting beat up. Yeah. Like, I mean, it's hard to play at that size, at that age. Like, it's incredible he has had the years he's had in the past few. But add that to a long playoff run. Like, you know, there's a reason I think he was never able to stay fully healthy throughout the Rockets years. Like, even then he was old. Now he's like really old. And it's just like, it's showing through. Like, they're asking him to carry when Booker's out. He can't do it. I mean, he couldn't get that much against Teague. He got nothing against Drew. And I actually thought late in the game, they should have put somebody else on CP. And like, I don't think he was shooting his way out of it at that point.
I think every time Chris is being on him, it's being good.
They did. Whenever, when Devin Booker came back into the game after he had his like four or five fouls, they put Drew on him and put Chris on CP, or they put Tucker on CP, because they know he just didn't have it that night. And Drew Holiday, they needed to put him on Booker. So I thought that was a good switch. Like, it's great that you pointed out that out, Ty, because Drew Holiday, even though we'll talk about this in a little bit here, even though he's been a tire fire, is being just generous to his offensive output in the series so far.
Can't make layups, which is turns out just problematic.
He's probably going to be good the next game. I mean, he's just so wildly.
We said that the last two games, but like, his defense has been astounding. It's just been incredible. For as much as I just said about Chris Paul being off, and while that still remains true, Drew Holiday is doing the best he can to put Chris Paul in situations that are not favorable for Chris Paul. And he's doing that by being physical. He's wearing him out. In this series, when calls are clearly not happening for either team, he's realizing that. He's like, I can play up more, except if you're PJ Tucker, but that's a different story. PJ Tucker is just not going to get a whistle anytime as a Milwaukee Buck. Nope. But Drew Holiday is just putting Chris Paul in the hell prison that Laz has talked about this entire season. It's just incredible.
Someone tweeted this. Sorry, but you said you basically got to it. I can't remember. I should have made note of this. Someone tweeted that, you know, Drew Holiday has put Chris Paul in jail. He's also gotten to jail with him, and he's thrown away the key. And that is exactly what was happening. I don't know.
Streaky Shooter. That's who it was.
It was Streaky Shooter. You're 100% right. And I was like, yeah, that just 100% accurate. That, like, it's exactly what was happening.
He locked him and himself in a room and threw out the key. But yeah, he's been their most versatile defender somehow. in this series, even though Giannis is being unreal. Jrue Holiday has just gone from guarding Chris Paul to Devin Booker, who are both elite guards, but two very, very, very different players. And he's being asked to switch mentality on an instant, and he's doing it. And it's incredible. I've said this throughout the postseason. It makes up a little bit for his offensive inconsistencies. Like, you'll live with that if he's giving his all on the defensive end. You can't ask for like a perfect performance. That's why he's not like a superstar. That's mm-hmm. not why he's not like even like a star per se. That doesn't happen unless you're like a Giannis, unless you're a Kawhi, unless you're like a KD, a LeBron. Those are the only guys that bring it on both ends every night, and that's why they are the all-time greats. Jrue Holiday isn't that, so you have to live with his offensive inconsistencies if it means that you're getting A-plus Jrue Holiday on the defensive end.
I just need layups, though.
That's also fair.
But this is the thing. So he did have a good game in game three. This is when you said wrong. He just had a good game. And I remember us talking about it after the game, being like, this is fool's gold because he's 5 of 10 from deep. And
0 for 5 tonight.
Exactly. And he's living and dying by the jump shot because for some reason he cannot make a layup to save his life. And
unless
campaign
is on.
Yeah, that is true. He made some layups in the second half generally. First half, it was like the one that he did make, he nearly whiffed on from like, again, a foot. And you're just like, what is going on? There's like some, dare I say, mental barrier there that he was
he started passing out
against.
Of layups. Two different times in this game, at least, he passed out of a layup. And I was like,
he was like Giannis getting fouled late in the game and not wanting to shoot free throws.
I tweeted, I was like, I'm conflicted because it might be the right play considering the way he shot layups, but also you need to be able to make layups. Like, I can live with the jumper being inconsistent. I wish he wouldn't take as many. I agreed with you. It felt like he doesn't really, thankfully, play like this as much, but earlier Giannis, like, he would make his first three, and you're just like, oh, no. 1 for 8 from three incoming. That was Jrue Holiday last game to this game. Like, just make layups, dude. Like, you can punish anyone they have on the floor with the possible exceptions of Crowder. And well, we've seen him do it to Ayton. I thought Crowder had a really strong defensive game until he started just diving all over the place like he was running from grenades. But yeah, I just make layups, Drew. That's it. Like, but I obviously recognize.
I'm gonna bet that he makes at least 3 triples in game 5.
Take it.
Like this is just how it works. Or if he has another bad game in game 5, it'll come good in game 6. And this is a frustration because this is a big part of what we thought we'd moved away from when Eric Bledsoe was gone. It was like, okay, whatever it's going to be, we're going to get night in, night out, solid production. It doesn't have to be superstar level, but it won't be complete no-show. And yet there are these games. His defense is just so much better than Bledsoe's really, really good defense that it's just still bringing you to the point where you're on the verge of a championship. Like, truly, truly incredible. Imagine if he was consistent. Imagine if he found a level where he was pretty, like, just night to night, you could rely on what you were getting from him in this series. The Bucks, you know, they might have been lifting a trophy tonight. It's entirely possible if that guy is just there and you can rely on him. But I think the defense is incredible. I am curious with Paul. Like, I'm interested by what you're saying. I don't know if I'm quite there yet. It's kind of like the Booker thing where I didn't want to write Booker off last time and for the reason that we saw tonight where it's just, let's just not do that. I don't want to doubt Chris Paul completely. But honestly, the thing with Chris Paul is, and to your point of when you're that size and you're that age, you just can't overcome some stuff. He reminded me of Giannis tonight. I thought they play very similar games, but at Chris Paul's size and Chris Paul's age, he doesn't have a way to just, you know, keep the scoreboard ticking over, get some easy dunks and have a stat line that looks pretty respectable. And the case of both guys, it was kind of like, they're both hurt, right? They're both feeling something, which they probably are. And, you know, the other 10 guys kind of seeing the floor most often that could apply to two. But like, when you say that you think Chris Paul, this might be the toll of it, do you think he's going to have another game like this in the series?
wouldn't surprise me. Like Rohan said, Rohan or Adam, I forget which one, it might have been before we started recording. He ends up with a better shooting line than Jrue Holiday and also puts up 7 assists and 4 rebounds. It felt a lot worse than it looks on the stat sheet, but I could see one more like this in the next three. I guess we'll have to see how often Jrue is on him. I think that is fueling it, but I think they have found some sort of a recipe of start with Jrue on CP. If that's going really well and then Booker's doing something, then move him over. Because I think it's so much harder to get going again after a really tough start like that than it is to, you know, get like just from the beginning against a worse defender, get going. I will say one quick thing on Book. Bucks delivered the Suns their first loss in a game where Booker shoots 42% or better from the field. They were undefeated. My stat from the pod.
It's your favorite stat.
It's a good stat.
It is a good stat, Elson.
It was a good stat. It has now died dead, and we're very pleased that it has. You know, good riddance.
I think that makes it a better stat.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, we can cherish it now rather than if it had gone the other way. I wouldn't have liked Ty to be here saying, remember that stat, you know? I'm right again. I would have been like, shut up, Ty. Nobody wants to hear it. The one thing with Chris Paul that I am buying at this point is the turnovers, which is an incredible sentence to say.
Three straight games with what, at least 5?
Yeah, it's just, he's uncomfortable. 17 turnovers for the Suns in this game. 2, 5 for the Bucks. That's your ball game. And then some, because if the Bucks don't have that mega, mega advantage in the turnover battle, you know, they're in a lot of trouble. They scored 24 points off turnovers for the Bucks to 5 for the Suns. So the Bucks gain 19 points off of turnovers over the Suns in a game that they won by 6 points with the help of some fouls late in the game. You know, so that's the game. They found a way to turn over Chris Paul, turn over Devin Booker, and that in its own right is just a mega achievement. Just like no one else has come close to doing that. And the Bucks have got it to a point where you're like, it feels like that's going to happen every game.
The Suns had 120% more turnovers in the first half than the Bucks did in the entire game. 140, excuse me. They had 7 in the first half.
It's the thing with the shot making too, because when we talk about the Bucks and like you talked about their percentages earlier, Rohan, the Suns are having to make the shots they're making to overcome the turnovers. Like, that's the difference, and that's where I think it's hard for Bucks fans to feel that in the moment. But those shots, for all the difficult shots, they're just keeping them, like, afloat. That's how the game, when at halftime, it's like, how is this a 6-point game? Is that what it was? Yeah, 6-point game.
It was
tied at the half, 6-point game after 3 quarters. And you're like, how are they here? And the reason is, for all the shots they made, those shots were just digging them out of holes that they were creating by giving the ball up cheaply. And then by getting burned by the Bucks and punished. Like, that's got to be. I'd have to look closer into all of Giannis's points. But, like, there were quite a few that were in transition. Obviously, stuff like the steal off the inbounds where he just kind of tips it away from Ayton, which, again, mega, mega play. Like, will just get forgotten as a defensive play. But just awareness and just the ability to be like, oh yeah, I'm just going to reach my arm out and get this off you.
Was this the best defensive game we've ever seen from Giannis?
No, because...
Not all around, yeah. He lost all those shooters in the first
half. He lost those shooters.
Okay, so was the second half the best defensive half we've seen from Giannis?
The last 5 minutes included 2 of his best ever plays.
Yeah.
His best ever play and another one that's right in the mix. Like, so he was able to turn it right up. Because I remember even saying that probably in the first half in our group chat is like, Giannis doesn't look right, but the biggest problem is the energy isn't there defensively. And it really wasn't. And to go from that to then the plays that he made on that end late in the game is just truly astonishing.
You guys want to know something fun?
Always.
Are these ever fun? Oh, this probably will be. They won tonight.
I don't know why I'm just being judged before I even say it.
I said always.
Yeah, Adam was.
I was supporting you.
I was skeptical.
So in the previous games of the series, the two inactive players have been Axel Toupin and Dante DiVincenzo. Today it was Sam Merrill and Dante DiVincenzo. So there was an There was no updates to the injury report, which means there was
Bud doesn't adjust.
There was a conscious effort to make Axel Toupin available tonight, and I just want that to be known.
Inbounds plays. Maybe Thanasis
was. Yeah, that was my thought too. Because, well, we don't need to get down to Sam Merrill. You know? Tonight is not the night where we need to debate the merits of Sam Merrill. But yeah, okay, that was. I gave you the benefit of the doubt. I don't know if you delivered or not, but
it's an interlude. Come on. We're professionals.
We had like 4 years to talk about the Sam Merrills of the world. We don't need to worry about them tonight, thankfully. What was that, Rohan?
It's no.
I was just closing the loop. It's supposed to sound cool.
This is the man who just said we're professionals. I mean, are we?
No.
Yes.
Let's let the listeners decide.
Leave an Apple review.
Leave a 5-star rating if we are. Leave a 5-star rating if we're not.
There we go. I want to talk about Lopez versus Portis because I thought this was a fascinating game for that kind of, I don't even know what the word is, platoon, I guess, now. Portis gets one more minute despite 1-for-6 from the field. Made his only three. Somehow, Bobby Portis 0-for-5 from deep, but 5 rebounds, 1 steal, 1 block, +7 despite the awful shooting. Meanwhile, in 19 Lopez minutes, he is 4-for-9, makes all 6 of his free throws, though. 1 rebound, 1 steal. Bucks are a team low -13, despite his 14 points. I thought it made more of a difference on offense than defense, having Portis for Lopez. I thought the defense, it's the same things we kept seeing. And it's not even Lopez necessarily, although the 0-for-5 from deep isn't great. You don't expect that from him. But I just think the spacing looks different with Portis out there, and I think that's at least a solid part of the reason we're seeing him with Giannis more, if we did tonight at least, than Lopez with Giannis. I just feel like, again, I think we talked about this after game 2 or game 3, like Drew's woes around the paint. Like, one easier way to get more space is just to have more shooters out there. And although he hasn't been very good in the postseason, I do think Portis is closer to that than Lopez.
He's very, very afraid to shoot right now.
Yeah, I hate it.
It's the other thing.
I hate it.
Like, we talked about his slow release. It's slower than slow, and he's trying to find every reason not to shoot. Can't happen. I mean, Pat has to make all the shots he's making because the other guys who might be able to make a shot have just stopped. Like, Bryn Forbes officially out of the rotation. Thank God. But that means, you know, Bobby, if you got some chances, wide open trees, take the shot. You're going to be needed to take the shot. I'm still torn on this, I'll be honest. I mean, I don't care. They can split these minutes whatever they want. And if there's 2 more Bucks wins here, I will never talk about it again. And I doubt Brook Lopez or Bobby Portis would either. Bobby on defense is hard of mouth stuff. He nearly got dropped like 4 times, and it's just not good. It is not good at all. He is not comfortable out there. He's the guy that they pick on like they pick on Pat, but he is the book where when you see him on an island, you're like, he actually can't do this. There isn't really a good contest coming. It's about whether the shot's going to be made or not. And on this occasion, I think it was good that Chris Paul didn't have it, because Chris Paul rocked him and got good shots a few times that he just wasn't making anything. So that it remains something that's a little scary. A little is definitely underselling it. It scares the hell out of me. But +7, something is working there. You know, something is working. We talked about it in the pregame show we did. The numbers are saying, particularly when he's out there with Giannis, that good things are happening. It's not always easy to see. It's not always necessarily tied to Portis's contributions, which that would bring it back to what you're saying, Ty, where it's just maybe the spacing is better and maybe the overall net impact of what his presence on the floor is doing is just worth more than some of the issues that are arising from his actual individual play.
Yeah, I think it's more of the... It's weird... most of the time, Brook Lopez being deceptively long, I've fully leaned into it. Congratulations.
Did you notice that Mark Jackson said early in the game, he counted it on the books deceptively
length? I was really hoping you would not bring this up.
Did you notice, Ty?
I actually missed it.
He made reference to the book's deceptive length.
So you're telling me Mark Jackson's a listener?
Exactly what I was about to say. So I can give you, we've got one listener. I think we may already have said things in this series that he might have stopped listening after that.
All due respect.
I'm not sure if that was on air or not, but I was really hoping no one picked up on that because
professionals.
I was hoping that we would not realize that the deceptive length is now a thing.
It's a real thing.
But I guess it is now. It's now part of the NBA canon. It's sometimes his size works against him in terms of the Bucks' overall offensive scheme because he sort of clogs things up a little bit. Bobby's a little smaller. He's a little faster, and that sort of helps the Bucks' offense in that people can move around a little bit better. I don't know if it's that, but that's the one thing I can think of that would really make any sense in terms of the flow of the offense for why Bobby Portis would be better than Brook Lopez, especially when Bobby isn't hitting his shots and he hasn't been hitting his shots. That's the one thing that makes sense to me. So even if Chris Paul and Devin Booker are going to try to take advantage of Brook Lopez and Bobby Portis, on the offensive end, the Bucks' offense will move a little bit quicker. It'll move that half step faster. And that's been the recipe for killing the Suns, is you have to play them fast because the Suns want to slow things down in terms of half court when Chris Paul is on the court. I know they're a very fast team overall, but when Chris Paul is on the court, he's going to want to slow things down, especially in these late game situations, these final situations just as a whole. So if you want to beat them, you have to play faster than them. You have to play faster than the Chris Paul team, and Bobby Portis helps with that.
I'm now trying to figure out, and maybe I've cracked how Bud is actually approaching, you know, Brooke and Bobby, and where
dangerous
he's
Pepe Sylvia territory you're in here.
I think it might be that has Brooke got the 3-point shot? And that comes back to your spacing, because I guess they just want to see Giannis get as many clear runs at Ayton as possible and get Ayton out of the game if they can. Yeah. And we'll get back to it again. But Monty Williams, again, very obliging at taking his best players out of the game if they find themselves in foul trouble. But that might be the thing, because Brooke is 0-5 tonight. And then it's just like, well, even if Bobby doesn't shoot it, they're going to respect him more just kind of to begin with.
I think his athleticism plays into it some as well. I just think it helps everything else move a bit. The tough thing with Lopez is he's still clearly more effective on offense when he's in the paint. But
on defense.
On defense for sure. I was a little surprised they never switched with him. I still didn't think that was as bad as everyone else. And the drop was like Booker loved it. He was a huge fan of that. So I didn't love the way they played him defensively. I would like to switch it up more. But offensively, too, he's certainly better in the paint. They just don't have that real estate, shout out to Pat, to give up to him. Like, there's other players that need that, namely Giannis and then secondarily Drew, and it just gets tough. I wouldn't mind seeing if he's going to be out there. Like, I know Giannis has stupid numbers as the pick-and-roll ball handler. Wouldn't mind seeing some Giannis Brook and then, like, whoever the smaller guy ends up with, like just throw an alley-oop to that guy. I mean, just like toss it. I mean, it's not even an alley-oop at that size. You're just like kind of throwing it straight forward if you're honest. Like some weird stuff like that might work to let both of them use the paint. It's super weird. I don't know if the Bucks are going to bust that out or not, but they do.
They never run it as much as they should. Like it's something they should go to more. Particularly you look at some of the shots Pat's been getting. If you run Giannis Brook pick and roll, you can get Chris in those spots, maybe. Yeah. You know, it's like there's a lot of good options that could come from that.
It doesn't work because they just foul him every time and they won't get called because they're both massive.
Well, I mean, you foul him if you want. If it's an alley-oop, it's still 2 points.
Like, no, I mean, they're going to shut off Lopez from getting to the rim in terms of getting into good positioning. It's it's not something that works. The Giannis is a ball handler. He was actually the most efficient pick and roll ball handler in the entire league in the regular season, like you were mentioning, Ty, just super efficient. It works because of the threat of the shooter flaring out, because that's another defender that has to be like, oh my God, I have to go. There's a wide open 3-point shooter coming. So I guess I have to like sort of hedge against Giannis, and it's just like, okay, I'm going to go dunk the basketball sort of thing, or I'm going to lay it up. I'm going to finish at the rim. That's what makes it so efficient, is because you're introducing another spacing threat in the opposite direction of Giannis's forward momentum. And that's why that works a lot. It doesn't even have to be a flare to the 3-point line. It can just be anywhere. It can be to the elbow. It can be a Chris Middleton jumper. It's just anything away from the rim. So if you're running another roller alongside Giannis, it doesn't work as well, because they can just pack the paint that much easier.
Yeah, but if they go in front of Brook, you just throw it to Brook. And if they hedge to Brook, then Giannis can get to the rim.
And there is
this works.
I would like to see it. I mean, all we can talk about is in theory, because they never do it.
His comfort shooting, right? Whether they believe he's going to make them, they may well live with it. But you've got a very genuine, you know, this is going to feed into something that's got a lot of praise. I've heard a lot of very smart people praise it in recent days, and that is the Bucks' random play. You're introducing a more random element to your offense if you're running more Giannis Brook pick and rolls, because of the options you have. Like, you can toy with the idea, okay, is Brook going to pop? And if you could get more off-ball movement, let's say you have Chris out there and you have Pat out there, and then with Pat, you've got cutters. I think it's an interesting action to start from, where it's like, okay, what kind of looks are you giving Giannis? What reads can he then make? And what will that do for your offense? We've got a special guest. Street. We've got a reporter, boots on the ground, now returned home. Hello, Jordan.
Hello. Does my voice sound okay? Not really.
It sounds better than Tali's voice.
I was going to say, it's not the worst on here.
Rowan's voice has improved as we've gone on. I think Rowan's found some life. He was struggling to begin with. But yeah, you've got the propeller hat on. People will have seen this on social media.
The lucky hat knows all. That's all we
Jordan,
have to say.
when was the last time you were at Fiserv Forum? Have you ever been at Fiserv Forum for a book loss?
No.
We're going to get you tickets for game 6 here. Someone's going to reach out with tickets for you. and then, yeah, but do you remember the game you saw at the Bradley Center that they lost?
It would have been 2015-16.
And you do go to games,
you know,
regularly.
What? I think I know what game it was. I think it was the game that Jason Kidd got tossed. It was the night
before Zarba game?
The Zarba game. That was the last Bucks loss I saw in person. No, wait. Maybe not. I don't know.
That's a good game to be there. Counts as a win.
Yeah. And we saw better theatrics tonight than dramatics tonight than that. Good Lord. What the hell?
That's Jay Crowder you're talking about?
I mean, take your pick, guys. Let's take
the
your
officials.
Pick. David Guthrie, James Capers.
Give us some thoughts from being in the arena.
A lot of beer chugging, more beer chugging than I remembered. And I'm just thinking too, I look at the prices of all these things, and I was just like, a Coors Light's like $13. And I'm just like, these guys, they just got it for $13 and it's gone in 10 seconds. It's just done. You know?
That you've come on after they've just won game 4 to tie up the series. I'm like, thoughts from the arena, and you're
the economics.
Like, the Coors is $13. Guys, buy it, and then it's gone.
You enjoy it for 13 seconds?
Can't say enough good things about Coors Light.
Exactly, right?
Yeah. I'm chilling.
No, I mean, it was certainly as intense as it felt. Or any playoff or any game that I've been to. What am I talking about? The finals. And I mean, just I don't know how to like arrange my thoughts in a way that is good for podcasting, but just
glad to join.
Yes, you're welcome.
Listen back to the intro.
But I just, the last 5 minutes of that game is like tattooed in my brain of just like, you feel like it just felt like they were chasing that game the whole time. And that was what happened. And then Pat hits the three and it just felt like, okay, that's the breakthrough. And then was that not the start of Jay Crowder's like awfulness, right? Or something like that? Or
I think it's a little before that.
I think, yeah,
a little before that. He took it to a new level. And then you're just like, where is this going to come from? Like, is it going to be Chris? Is it going to be Giannis? I mean, that one in itself was – watching Giannis tonight, too, was very strange. I know I was messaging you guys when I had the time, but, like, he just felt so detached from everything. Like, even the timeouts, you know, as long as they are now, like, half of them he would be, like, either on, like, where the scoreboard table is and then would come into the huddle when they start, like, drawing up plays and stuff like that. It was just – super weird vibe and energy from Giannis specifically. Then, of course, it gets erased because, you know, he has the greatest play of defensive play in finals, or second greatest defensive play in finals history.
Not according to Pat Connaughton. Pat Connaughton is currently on the he's currently doing his media rounds, making a case that Giannis's block should be ahead of LeBron's block in Game 7 in 2016 as the greatest block of all time. This comes courtesy of Tim Bontemps.
It's certainly more heads up, right? Like, who is making that recovery? Because if you look at it, it looks like an automatic bucket.
It's more impressive than a chase down, because the chase down's right in front of you.
Yeah. Giannis already did the chase down.
But that's you can see, I know you've got to close the space. I know you've got to be an absolute freak to get the chase down, but you're literally chasing it down. It's there for you to go and get. It's the fact that he had to turn on this. It's the fact that just... it was the whole awareness of, you know, spatial awareness of where he was. Where I saw his quote was, he was expecting to get dunked on. He didn't think he had a chance of blocking it, which that speaks to it in its own right. It's like he's going up there being like, I'm going to get dunked on. And yet he's actually quick enough to get up there and block it. It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
I made the case, Jordan. I'm just curious as to whether you would agree or disagree with this, that that's the greatest highlight in Milwaukee Bucks history.
I would defer to maybe the Skyhook just because of like how
we knocked it to number two. That was number one. I think this,
but that's it's on that par. Like that's where it is.
That's the only other highlight there. Yeah.
With Kareem in attendance.
Was that the Bucks ellipse? You think we saw it tonight?
That might have been the Bucks ellipse. That
could have been the Bucks ellipse. Jordan, I wanted to ask, did the energy in the building change on Booker's obviously not called sixth foul? Because that's when it reminded me of the Nets game 7. Yeah, we have no idea. But it reminded me of the Nets game 7 where it felt like they were flat and then the calls, and they were awful calls all throughout the game for both teams. Like more against the Bucks late. But I just felt like they kind of – they had this edge after that, like, oh, fuck this. Like, we're not going out to something like this. And that's when it felt like, to me, the game turned. And I was like, I love that the Bucks are just like, it's like the 0-1 revenge tour. They're like, not again.
Yeah. No, I definitely agree with that. I mean, it's hard to, like, keep up with what calls didn't, like, make the crowd irate. At, you know, especially that fourth quarter. It just felt like call after call. And granted, some of it came to the Bucks side, too. I'm not, you know, defending that. But, like, it was just this mountain of all this stuff. And, you know, you think, it was just crazy. And then you could tell, like, how players were hyped. Pat was certainly hyped after the game, just winning that game. Portis, like, all the guys that you would expect, like, just being crazily just in it. Chris hitting that, which should have been an and-one, too. Like, that was ridiculous, like, with how many seconds left to go. It was something late, but... yeah, it was the energy just like it certainly felt like the game itself where it's like it kept rising. And then fourth quarter, all this like the tomfoolery of the foul calls and just the officials and just like Devin Booker hitting crazy shots. Like annoyed and just it just felt like they kept talking to the officials the whole freaking time. And I hate the stuff. You guys know I hate the stuff, but it's such a dominating storyline after that. And then just to see like overcoming the odds and just hitting these shots of like, you know, it was unreal, just unreal.
Bucks versus everybody.
Exactly.
And can we really get bold now? I think we've avoided this for long enough. I really think they might be destined to win this championship.
Adam, when you mentioned earlier in the series that the Suns haven't really faced any challenges, super big challenges heading into this series, that's immediately what I thought of after this game and during this game, realistically, especially during the late third or no, mostly just the fourth quarter.
Did you see Chris Paul when he was walking down the tunnel after the game? You see his face? It was different. I don't want to do this. I avoided this earlier. I don't want to play the, you know, I don't think we're going to see a good Chris Paul. But it, like, gut punch. Devin Booker, too. And obviously with the way Devin Booker played to put in that performance, it's like, you know, he had his 70 points in a loss, as they noted on the broadcast. So this is not entirely new for him to put in incredible performances in Suns losses. But I honestly, like, it's, you let off with it, Ty, where this is like, it brings you right back to game seven against the Nets. And it's like, they don't have it, but they're there. And then they find a way to win. Guys step up. They make incredible plays. This team cannot be killed. I think this championship is theirs.
You don't even need to go back that far to game seven. You just need to go back to the transition between games two and three in this series. If you want to say like, oh, Devin Booker put up 40 points in the loss, Giannis already did that this series. And they came back in game three. They're like, no, we're not going down 3-0. Giannis puts up another 40 burger. And then they win the game. Now they've won another one. This is how this team responds. Now it's on Phoenix. We know how this team responds. We've seen it before. I don't know if we're going to see it again because we might not need to. But we don't know how Phoenix is really going to respond to this. The last time they faced this sort of adversity was in this first round against the Lakers, and they had Anthony Davis miss time, and that's how they, you know, that's what happened. Like, I'm not saying, oh, they had an easy path or anything, because obviously, like, you can only play the team that's in front of you. I'm not going to say anything to say that, oh, the Lakers should have won that series or anything. But the only time the Suns have faced adversity, the only time the Suns have trailed in a series is when they were down 2-1 to the Lakers. And then the Lakers lost their second best player. How are they going to respond this time? That's going to be what I'm looking for in game five. Five? Yeah,
five. What I found fascinating about this game was the Bucks looked dreadful for most of it. Phoenix never had a double-digit lead. The biggest Suns lead was 9. And that is what you were saying, Adam. The Bucks are not killable. Like, they're just going to stick around and stick around and stick around and stick around, and then one opening, and they just take the game. They're a team that knows how to do that now. We'll see if Phoenix is. We'll see. I think you have to like their chances because they've been through more this postseason. They have the best player in the series. Steal one in Phoenix, win one more in Fiserv, and that's all she wrote. Like, it's a really good feeling, which is crazy because for so much of this game, I was like, oh, God, same old Bucks, they're back. And they ended up being the same old Bucks, the same old 2021 playoff Bucks who have been doing shit like this the whole run and somehow getting away with it. That's their new brand, I guess.
We have another NBA player tweeting.
I love it. Is it CJ McCollum this time?
It's actually not CJ. It's future Buck Rashawn Holmes tweeting, that block by Giannis, one of the best I've ever seen.
Former son, Rashawn Holmes.
So yeah, that's my update.
I thought it was going to be a slightly higher profile player than Rashawn Holmes.
Oh, good. Don't disrespect Rashawn Holmes like that.
He's a free agent this offseason.
Yeah, future Buck. I'm speaking it into existence. Can you imagine Rashawn Holmes on this team?
Really what I'm busy imagining right now, Rohan. It's destiny to win a championship. Rashawn Holmes, you know, he can wait a couple of weeks at least to start to occupy like any space in my brain.
I mean,
I know they're celebrating the 75th anniversary next year, but I thought the NBA was stopping after this year, right? This is it. This is, they're going out in a blaze of glory, right?
I don't even know if I have anything left, honestly.
I was trying to think. I watch sports for a living, right? I literally watch.
Why did you just sound like Drake saying I study rap battles for a living?
Well, if that's how you want to perceive me, that's fine. I mean it. Aside from book stuff, like I my job involves me watching like 40 hours of sports a week. I don't know if I've ever seen something like this. I've certainly never felt just the sheer terror that this game just brought out of me. It was incredible. It made Game 7 against the Nets feel quite quaint to me, honestly. And I just didn't think that was possible. I honestly, there's no way you could have told me anything other than the Game 7. I wouldn't have thought there's a scenario where it feels like that. But this was always, and everyone knows, it's, you know, Game 4 in a series like this, it dictates, it decides what you're going to get. It sets the tone for what it is. The Suns, two games ago, this was in their hands. They could have gone, got one game, and it's theirs to be won. They blew it.
Chris Paul Finals MVP, baby. Anointed after 36 minutes of basketball in this here Finals. I hate when that's done in general for any player. Like, Zach Lowe said the same thing. It's not an original take, but like, let's just play the series. But I just thought it was kind of perfect that he's been pretty bad for most of the last three games after being also like the heart of their team, who like Obi-Wan Kenobi ghosts on the bench even when he's out. He's their most important player. Some weird Suns narratives with CP this year. But yeah, it's, everything is different now.
One last thing, because this is the second game in a row, just a factor. Monty Williams messed up again.
Booker?
Yeah. Like, just, I thought he got it right. Like, in the third quarter, he takes him out and you're like, he's done it again. And it turns out to only be a couple of minutes and you're like, okay, maybe he's just decided this can be his rest. This can be his rest. We'll get him to cool off, you know, get him to compose himself. Then he goes and he gets the fifth foul and he's sitting and he's sitting and he sits way too long. Like, the way Booker was, he cooled off. He cooled off when he came back in that game. He started missing shots because when he came out, he was missing absolutely nothing. So it's the second game in a row where it's happened. And I just feel like you look at it here and Crowder was close. Ayton was there in the first half. I think Giannis ended the first half. He didn't attack Ayton. I was like, Ayton is there to get his third foul. There was like 5 minutes, 6 minutes. I was like, I'd just be going at him relentlessly. Try and get that third foul and see how Monty Williams reacts. I feel like it's going to happen every game, though. If this series goes two more games, if it goes three more games, the Suns are going to get one of their starters in foul trouble. And when that happens, they have a big problem. And we've seen the way he reacts. We've seen the way he reacts to it. And most importantly, knock on wood, Bucks players are doing a phenomenal job of avoiding foul trouble. Giannis got a foul late on. I was like, I wonder what number that is. And Mike Breen's like, that's a second foul on Giannis. I was like, wow, well, that's great. Because all of the years where if we could have dreamt of this moment, that's the kind of thing you'd be like, oh, well, you know, Giannis foul trouble could end up being a factor. Because it was just a factor in every single game he played for so much of his career. Not anymore. Like, there's a difference in the discipline of these two teams as well. And it's making Bud's job easier and not having to make those calls. But I don't think Monty's making the right calls. And that's two games in a row it's cost them. And now they're all tied up again.
It's not even just the foul thing. Do you want to know something fun about the fourth quarter for the Suns rotation? Torrey Craig played more than Mikal Bridges.
I was just about to bring up Bridges' minutes too. 25 and a half minutes.
They never play him. I don't understand it. That was one of the better game twos. Just a great game in that.
Well, it's not even just that. I mean, we talked about early in the series, like, Chris trying to get a bucket on Bridges is tough. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, he yeah, I know, like, if they try to switch off him and, you know, get him Giannis and all that, like a pick and roll and all that stuff. But it wasn't like that was working either for the Bucks. A lot of it was just, you know, it was building gravity off for Chris to get a bucket off or whoever else is initiating offense. It was just a lot of like, Giannis wasn't like bending the defense in a way, or, you know, that's a separate issue, but like it, how it's felt like with the Suns and Monty kind of feels right now, how we felt with the Bucks against the Raptors 2 years ago at the conference finals, where it started, you know, you're starting to lose kind of the grip of the game, the series overall.
I love it, Jordan.
I mean, we've seen this, how the story ends, but yeah, I'm not saying it's going to repeat, but like, there's just kind of weird trust issues that he's had with his players that have been a little interesting considering just where their depth is right now.
Also, I thought, like, every time the Bucks run out a three bench player lineup and I get ready to like pull out my hair, I look over and I go, oh, it's Campaign, Cam Johnson, and Torrey Craig. They've agreed to do it at the same time again for whatever reason.
That Campaign works. Cannot play in the series.
Apparently he's much better at home, so I'm not gonna
he wasn't even good in the home games.
I'm not gonna give him too much shit until post game five.
Again, I said this the last episode though. Jay Crowder is having the series that we would be worried about. Like, mostly, he cooled off a bit in this one.
The defense, but I thought,
the defense is really good.
Really good.
Listen, we have every reason to hate the flopping. If you're flopping like that and you're getting the calls, it's the NBA Finals. I would not care if I was a Suns fan. If any book wants to do that, that gets them over the line. You know, Suns fans can moan about it for 50 years. They've probably been doing that about the coin flip. I would not care. Like, do it. He's getting away with it. He's just making plays that are getting his team closer to winning, but they're not winning. The books are seeing the Jay Crowder games. They're seeing the Jay Crowder plays, and they're finding ways to win. This is incredible. They're winning when, you know, everything says they're not going to win. We've watched years of them not winning.
That's been the series, right? Where they've won the margins. I mean, say for three-point shooting, which is, you know, that's very Bucks-like in its own right. But, like, everything has pointed, you know, overwhelmingly to the Bucks' direction. And, yeah, it looks weird to see the Bucks win a six-point victory, you know, game four and even up the series when Jrue Holiday is 4-for-20 or whatever the case may be. But, like, they are just getting enough everything else to kind of combat, you know, bad shooting. Bad night from their third best player, Brooke Lopez, playing just a little over 19 minutes, which I understand. Like, at this point, you just kind of are comfortable, or not comfortable with it, but you just like live with it. And it's working by hook or by crook. it's working incredibly. I don't know.
How. John Hanson's still out there? By hook or by
Brooke? Let's hope. They should bring him.
Yo, those Giannis John Henson pick and rolls with Henson's vertical spacing would be incredible.
Now it's going to work. I love that the Suns did not win Booker's minutes. 39 minutes, 42 points on 28 shots, according to ESPN, plus zero. All that from him, and they break even in those minutes.
I was going to say, like, it's like full of Thanos, like all that for a drop of blood. They didn't even get a drop of blood.
All that for a goose egg.
Tough. Tough scene. Jordan, I do have a question for you for the in-arena reaction to Kareem. Was there any sort of...
Good. It was good.
I'm glad to hear it.
It helped that he was sitting next to Oscar Robertson. Plus,
There shouldn't need to be a help. He should be recognized.
Well, that's how...
Did they introduce the 71 team together as such?
Yeah, it was kind of like a line. It was first Dandridge, then it went down to McLaughlin, and then they were opposite of Kareem and Oscar.
You just know Johnny Mack was late in the game. He's like, they just need to get a stop, a score, a get another stop.
Get them out of the pop-up zone.
Zone, exactly.
What was the reaction to Michael Redd like?
Good. He was sitting next to Dave Chappelle.
Oh, nice. I asked that because there are now pictures being tweeted from the Bucks account of Michael Redd and Chris Middleton just embracing after the game, like directly after the game.
Well, that's
great. Tunnel as well. It's just like 22-22, man.
Yeah.
It's incredible.
I heard this you didn't ask about Chappelle's ovation, but I heard that one on the broadcast. Yeah. That was loud.
It was very loud. I think he was the first one introduced as well. So it was kind of set the tone.
Nice.
And or maybe not the first, I think it was Za'Darius Smith, Packers defensive end.
What about Sheryl Crow? Did Sheryl Crow get a...
I saw, I think it was Jeff Zilgit of the USA Today. They get like a celebrity list.
Yeah.
Of people that are in attendance. Apparently she was on it. They didn't show her.
Really? Wow, she was there. We were too busy getting the collab set up. That's
I was about to say, so does that mean you didn't get the podcast booked?
I got exclusive with Sheryl.
on that
man note. With a propeller hat approaches Sheryl Crow at the books game.
Hey, it was a hit.
Tell us about the reactions and the looks, please. You must have got. You were wearing, you're still wearing that.
I recognized for the first time, not even wearing it. I was just holding it, getting into the arena.
Was this by MK Robert?
Yes, it was.
Nice.
And then I wore it. I had a boost of confidence. I was like, yeah, I'm walking in. Lucky hat for a joke that no one else makes sense. And then I went to get a beer. Bartender wearing the hat loved it. She loved it.
There we go.
Yeah.
That $13 Coors Light went down all the smoother then.
Yeah, I didn't drink as fast as other people.
I'm glad this could finally get paid off, and I'm glad that at least someone recognized it and be like, yes. That is the man, the myth, the legend, Jordan Dresky. And I recognize him because he is wearing a propeller hat. That is, you cannot write a better story than that.
The thing is what started as a joke will now actually be a tradition. You will be the guy who's always at Bucks games with a propeller hat.
Yep. It's my new lucky hat. I got to bring it. It looks like the Mecca floor. I could just, excuse it for like that.
It looks like the Mecca floor, yeah.
We're going to see it again in game 6. Someone get Jordan's tickets, please.
Yep.
Don't give them to me. Give them to Jordan. That's how
much. He's a lucky charm. Seriously. Yeah. Let's get Jordan
him
to
the
game.
Hat. It's double luck.
Hey, I'm just saying, someone out there who's listening can make this happen. Whoever's
Jordan
listening.
Counterbalances all like the ancient burial ground hoodoo. That's,
That was
the TikTok dog. The TikTok dog is wrong.
Oh, yeah.
That was just waiting to happen.
That was going
to
be my outro, Ty.
Oh, I didn't. Well, I just, it clicked for me.
No, that's okay. No, that's okay.
Sorry.
No, but yeah, the TikTok dog is now wrong. Is it time for an outro? Are we done here?
People who didn't tune in for the pregame on YouTube are like, what? The TikTok dog? What are they talking
about? That is more of an incentive for you to subscribe to our YouTube channel, Eurostep Podcast Network on YouTube, so you can get these jokes. So you can get these jokes. I don't know why you're saying it like that. We are.
That's what I meant.
I don't know. I don't know how to respond to that. But yes, make sure you subscribe to our YouTube channel so you can... get every single joke as we sort of build this Eurostep Podcast Network universe out. yes, that'll do it for us here on the Eurostep Podcast Network post game. Hopefully this was enjoyable, entertaining. And if it was, make sure you leave a 5-star rating on Apple. Ty, do you have a 5-star rating to read out for us?
I sure do. This one's heartfelt. Garrett from MKE. writes, a long overdue review. 5 stars, of course. I've been listening to the Win in 6 pod since the Jack Bauer days.
Oh.
Mm.
It's a real one.
Might have been like familiar with the propeller.
Yeah, I'm sure Garrett from MKE is well aware of the propeller. He continues, their long form banter has fed my soul for many years. I found the Eurostep pod last season and found it to be a great counterbalance as an efficient analysis of the Bucks.
Not anymore.
No. The combination is one for the ages. Despite geography, at least for Adam, these are the local guys. A perfect balance of fandom, not homerism, and informed analysis. It has been cathartic seeing each host mentally break while Adam has served as cool-headed constant. Through misery and bliss, These hosts keep me on the ship. It doesn't even matter if we're going down. Bucks in six.
First of all, I'm glad Garrett missed the Bryn Forbes jump shot game. That was probably for the best. I'll happily accept that title. And secondly, thank you for the lovely review. Lovely, lovely review.
It was very, you were right when you said it was heartfelt. That's perfect. It also rhymed at the end. It felt like a little sonnet there. It was perfect. It was perfect. We do appreciate these reviews, so make sure you leave a review. And guess what? If you do, you can get it read out on the podcast, just like Garrett from MKE just did. So make sure you leave that 5-star rating on Apple, and make sure you are subscribed on your podcast platform of choice. Check out all the great content across the Blue Wire Podcast Network. Once again, subscribe to the YouTube channel. I am emphasizing this because we really want you to subscribe. Please do it. It'll make us feel better. So you can tune into our pre-games, because we at least have two more games in this finals. And I think we're all in agreement here. Adam, I'm realizing I forgot something, but I'm going to keep going.
Just keep going. It worked out. It gave us good luck. If you think it's now a superstition, I'll let you do it.
I'm not. I was literally just trying to finish the outro, but now it is.
Cool. Well, if they lose the next game now, I'm going to
give you a score prediction,
fault.
Adam. Fine. Now you're the one wanting it. Now give it to me.
Bucks 150, Suns 60. I went big with the last prediction, and the Bucks won, not in big fashion, but they did win.
Okay, I tie Jordan. It's fine. It's fine.
I've got it covered.
Yes, but again, thank you for listening to this episode. Go Bucks. We will talk to you next time.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.